wash your hands for at least 20 seconds. You know how you see doctors on TV shows washing their hands and then putting their arms up? This is the way to do it. You'd sing happy birthday twice if you want to. But you got to scrub those hands. You've got to interlace your fingers and scrub. Scrub your fingertips, you know, that touches everything from buttons to elevator buttons, everything else. Wash the back and the front of your hands. You're doing it for yourself. You're doing it for your family. You're doing it for the whole community to stop community spread. We have to keep each other safe in this very dire time. I'm Amy Goodman. Thank you so much.
And that public service announcement brought to you by WUSB in Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock. Time, once again, for Off the Wall. Tuesday evening is upon us. Another exciting edition of Off the Wall. As I play at levels here to try to figure out what the sweet spot is. Okay. This is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein, joined by Kyle.
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
Okay, I think we're all right. I think people can hear us.
Yeah, I hear everything.
Can you hear us out there?
There's no one.
The neighbors can't hear us.
This is a studio.
It is a studio, and we're isolated. Speaking of neighbors, we have a bit of an issue. We had to turn off our TV set so we can't watch the news while we're doing the show, so we don't know what's going on in the world, because we have to turn on our surveillance camera and watch our garden, because we had an intruder. We can talk about this. We had an intruder violate our happy garden.
Yeah, thankfully with technology we can monitor it remotely here. From an even more remote location, and what it tells us is that currently we are not under attack, but that will lead to complacency, because we actually are under attack.
We've been under at least three occasions the last 2 days.
Yeah, so do you remember the storm over the weekend or early weekend?
Yeah, it was a series of storms.
So there was some thunder showers, some thunderstorming, and that brings really quite a bit of rain, and what I was already observing when I was over there was that there's some bugs, leaf hoppers. We found out about leaf hoppers, and they were damaging some things.
Our sunchokes.
Right. We have a nice couple rows of them. And
we are so happy with these sunchokes.
Well,
they shot up like nobody's business. They're about 6 feet tall now. I've never planted anything so successful.
Yeah, we really did a fantastic job. It's been a learning experience, and they're beautiful. They're really tall, and they're really, and I'm excited for the flowers. That's the main thing. We want to have a bit of color and maybe some butterflies, all that. Great. So to get to that, we need to battle nature itself. And there's an ugly side to nature.
Why does nature fight itself? I don't get that.
I don't know.
We're trying to grow something, and there's this other part of nature that's trying to destroy what we're doing. What's up, nature? Come on.
It's incredibly discouraging. And I know we're playing this like vital role in an ecosystem and a habitat and an agrarian society, and it's this, sort of this old, new technology.
Nature is depending on us.
Yeah, that we're like impacting the soil. It's very interesting, and it's a cool experience, but it is not without its travail. And this week, the predator not being an insect, which we've already been dealing with, and it seems to be somewhat under control. We need actually some ladybugs from a nursery, but of course you have to go to a nursery and talk to somebody to get ladybugs.
I don't understand how that works. What, the ladybugs are just in a jar or something?
How do you get a cup of them, apparently.
How do you even get a bunch of ladybugs to put in a cup?
I don't know.
And how do ladybugs survive in a cup?
No, that's just to transport them. They like
right, but where are they before you transport them? Are they hanging out on the field?
I don't know. And I think they have a little like condos or like.
No, there's no way you can store ladybugs in a cup. They're not going to like that.
There's a ladybug farming mechanism. I don't know where they make all the ladybugs, but they buy them in bulk and then they're available. Presumably, I'm thinking like agriculture stores. So anyway. That's all in the works, I guess. And, you know, you have to interact with people, and there's all these COVID restrictions and stuff like that, and you have to be in a store, a local store, which, yeah, you want to support and go to. So that's another side of that, and we're doing some other things to mitigate. But there's a new pest.
Yeah, we mentioned this. The groundhog is back. He showed up 2 days ago, and we saw him. He made a beeline for the car. He came out of the forest and just walked right to the... He didn't even look left or right, knew exactly where he was going.
Honestly, we had two different beds in different areas that were protected, and we should have known after the first attack on some, you know, herbs and rose bushes and some other edible leafy things that, you know, our chili peppers and radishes devastated. And so the second attack is on a completely deer-proofed, fenced area with these sunchokes.
See, that was the clue. It's deer-proof.
Yeah.
It's not groundhog-proof.
Yeah, that's the definite distinction.
That's
right
how they
there.
Get you.
So anyway, yeah.
You need another fence for the groundhog.
It's high enough for deer, I think, to avoid, and I haven't had a lot of attempts that way, but now this avenue is something that's really about being low to the ground, and for at least a couple days, the fencing was adequate.
Yeah. But apparently he really wanted those plants, sunchokes.
This groundhog is persistent and pathologic, and this is premeditated. This thing keeps coming back.
Yeah.
It's going around the perimeter, and the latest is it has chewed through and made a small hole in one corner, and it got four plants pretty well stripped. And it came back, I think it got three more today. One completely bent over. It's really traumatic. If you grow things, and especially edible things, and you're trying, as we had stated, to participate in an ecosystem, and you're rebuffed by something that is as excited about what you're growing, it can really kind of I'm shell-shocked.
Yeah.
And that's the update on our current attack.
Well, so we're watching this monitor now. We might have to leave at a moment's notice if the bastard comes back.
I've been told to mind how I react, and I'm going to reserve comment and just calmly dispose of.
We don't want to hurt him. We just want to talk to him. You know, we don't want any, and it doesn't have to be violent. But we got to get him to stop what he's doing.
What if I just
If I
bring the shovel with me and just sort of tap it, you know,
well,
in a menacing way.
I'm going to say he just for the sake of...
Yeah,
he's acting like a jerk.
Do we really need to gender it?
That pretty much covers it. He's got some testosterone issues.
Yeah, he is a jerk. He's really aggressive.
But you made a little bit of noise the other day when you saw him inside, and he bolted. So he's very sensitive to noise. So maybe there's something we can do where we can generate noise whenever he shows up. But I've also read that... Little bowls of Epsom salts will drive a groundhog away. So if it's something as simple as that...
I'll do any of it.
And we're going to run another level of the fence, so I'll have to chew through two different levels to get to where he's going.
Our garden is going to start looking like a penitentiary.
Yeah, we thought the deer is what we had to worry about, and they haven't been a problem at all. They're fine. Hey, have your sunchokes. Be cool. It's not a big deal for us, but... This one groundhog is making our lives miserable. The same one that made our lives miserable last year. Remember, he was there?
Yeah.
Where was he before? Does he just come back after the 4th of July? He's somewhere else, and then he's here?
I feel like he lives under the house or something. He just seems so familiar and comfortable. I don't know. I'm getting, flashbacks to, Caddyshack, which is an old 80s movie.
I never saw that. I'm glad I didn't.
It's stupid. But there's a menacing groundhog at the golf course. But this is real life. This is serious.
Yeah.
And these animals are something to be reckoned with. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
well, imagine if there was
a
fleet of groundhogs, you know, just one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is... It's a lot. Just one.
That?
Whoa.
Oh, it's a bird. Okay, so I saw something move. I was ready to go. All right. Just keep an eye on the screen
right
there. I'm going to get into some news.
False alarm. Yeah, I'll watch
there's
it.
There's things
now
that are going on in the world besides this.
Yeah, let people know there's other stuff.
We don't know about the other stuff because we have to watch this now.
Yep.
And this is what we are doing. whatever is happening. Well, I found out a couple of things. I checked the teletype. Did you hear this news? Bolsonaro from Brazil. He got the coronavirus. The guy's been mocking and ridiculing people for taking precautions and pretty much doing everything he can to make sure that the coronavirus prospers in Brazil. Now he's got the virus, tested positive. I don't want to say that anybody deserves to have the coronavirus, but if anybody deserves to have it, it's Bolsonaro. It absolutely is. And Trump, he deserves it as well. Now, I don't think anybody should die from it, but I do think they need to feel the pain. I think they need to realize this is nothing to mess with. And you've been doing a tremendous disservice. You have been responsible for the deaths of thousands, if not more, people as a result of your ignorance and encouraging people to flout health regulations and do stupid things like we've seen even here on Long Island, out east. Hundreds of people in tents dancing with close proximity, no masks. What do you think that kind of behavior is going to get us?
Not to mention how much it sets up the people who are telling people the right thing to do to be discredited unnecessarily and unjustly. Like he himself discrediting his own officials or otherwise making their impact less than by his own aversion to their guidelines. And we've seen the exact same thing play out here. So it's, it's like not that I or you or anyone else was wishing this upon them. I think they were pretty much welcoming an infection from this thing with open arms by actions and their leadership.
Well, I hope he gets the message. Probably won't. Probably be like Rand Paul, who just continues being a jerk afterwards. But, if anybody deserved to get it. So, the coronavirus marches on. We're doing great here in New York. We really are. I'm very proud of the way we've handled it so far for the most part. That goes for everybody from politicians to store owners. It's been hard. It's been rough. It's been painful. But our numbers are way down. And we've really... I saw a report on TV saying that New York resembles European countries more than it resembles the rest of the states as far as the way the numbers have dropped. And just it tells you that behavior is what determines how this thing plays out. That's all. And if you're going to be a jerk and pretend it doesn't exist, guess what? Your numbers are going to rise. I'm hearing the latest thing now is that the numbers aren't the same. They're going way up, but they're not the same as before because we're doing more testing and less people are dying. Yeah, you know, that might be the case that we're doing more testing, but not less. I mean, less people are not dying. It's basically if you start filling up the hospitals, and hospitals in Florida, Texas are becoming full to capacity right now. Those people aren't just going to magically get better because you think it's a time of year or something. You're still going to have numbers that rise, and it's going to be several weeks after the hospitals fill up that's going to happen.
Yeah, it's this delay, this impatience for this known delay, which is a complete byproduct of just how much direct control we individually have through our actions over the disease's evolution.
Right, yeah. And it is evolving. It's going to continue evolving.
People keep adapting, though, and especially here. I mean, people wanted to get out a lot, I think, in the last, you know, starting with Memorial Day and Atlanta, but and they're reopening ahead of schedule. There's been, I think, steps forward and then also some redoubling. And, I mean, that's also come from local and regional leadership saying, okay, well, you know, this happened, maybe like the incident in Montauk and some of the other stuff, Fire Island more recently, where guidelines weren't being followed, and the leadership says, okay, well, we're going to step up enforcement. So there's like a responsiveness, I think, that is good, and people know better. People know about it. There's no confusion. The message is definitely out there. So if you're flouting it, people are going to notice, and they're going to be a bit annoyed because they're working so hard, perhaps otherwise.
Yeah. Well, we're keeping our eyes open for, I guess, you know, how things are changing, how people are behaving. I don't know. What do you think? Is it getting better or worse? Are more people walking around without masks, or less people? Are the social distancing guidelines being followed? What have you noticed, especially over the holiday weekend?
I think people are a little overconfident with just how much control they can exert when they're in close proximity with a lot of people, especially with the recent news about how it's spread and airborne circulation, stuff like that. I think we're thrusting ourselves into situations where we assume we can control or predict the amount of space we have when we can't really. And you combine that with sort of, I don't want to say complacent, but people just going through the motions with masks, you're not going to have as effective. It'll be more more theater than actual precautions.
What do you mean by what, going through the motions with a mask? What is it
called? Oh, I see a lot of them dangling from people's faces or people walking with them in their hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people are doing the best they can, and it's a sort of requirement.
Are they, though? Are they really doing the best they can? It's a mask.
No, actually,
it's not that hard. It's not, although I had trouble with one the
other
day.
They're annoying.
It kept falling off my face, but I fixed it eventually. And
yeah.
If I can do it, anybody can do it.
The ear loops don't work, or your...
Do you know Vulcans can't wear face masks because of their ears? You'd think that the ears would hook them better, but apparently they have real difficulty keeping them on. That's something. Well, because you have to pull them harder to get over the pointy top, and sometimes they snap.
The ears?
No, the masks. For God's sake, Kyle.
I'm sorry.
You need special Vulcan masks to be manufactured.
Style, yes.
Yeah, so that's what you need to think of. Be thankful, folks, that you don't have that to worry about. But, it's difficult sometimes.
It is an adjustment, and it's that's, I think, what's going on. And there's certainly a large group of people that just don't care at all anymore and are super over the entirety of the thing, and that's, I think, more like the stupidity that you've been referencing, and in some of the stories from over the weekend and holiday stuff, and but I think it was probably better than it could have gone as far as 4th of July goes.
Here's the thing: you see a lot of people walking around the streets not wearing masks, but they're carrying masks, and you notice when they go inside someplace, they usually put one on.
Well, they have to.
They have to, so they're carrying one. They know the rules. Okay, we have that much at least. But if you're walking around the street and you're walking close to other people, you're not helping, because you could be spreading to those people. And there's a lot of misinformation about what the mask actually does. The mask doesn't protect you; it protects other people from you. So don't think that you can put on a mask. A lot of people get this wrong. I think you can put on a mask and just walk into an infected area and you'll be fine. No, that might work if you have what are the masks called again?
Full respirator or N95?
N95, yeah.
And that's going to be
sealed. The KN95 from China. They yep. both work, and that will protect you, but most people don't have those kinds of masks.
Yeah, and also, someone who is bearded from time to time, you know, you have to have a good seal for those masks. And I think in some of the discussion I heard on the C-SPAN programs and stuff, a lot of the commentary, there's some good points raised about that. And, I mean, my direction and my thought was just that as we do more and more things actively, like, we predict what will be necessary at every part of going to a grocery store. Like, we've done that, mm-hmm. and that's something I think a lot of people have trained themselves to deal with under this circumstance. But as you do 4 or 5 more things, including commuting or dropping people off places, and, you know, there's different things that are going to go on, commuting, all of those different things are just compounding and exponentially increasing the amount of interactions that people are having. And each one of those interactions is going to have a wide varying variation in how far away you can get from people, how good the air circulation is. And that's, I think, what has been coming in, and what we've been discussing for weeks and learning about how to deal with all this stuff. And I think people, they know, they have all the information, but it's almost like overload for the practicalities of getting certain tasks done. And people might think they've done one thing, but it might not be enough for just how many other interactions they're having, or you know, how complex, quote, new normal or being back to reopened, what that really means. And that's to say nothing of, like, indoor dining or gyms or anything of that nature. But so phase four is upon us, right? Is that the...
Well, phase four begins tomorrow.
It's tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's going to be limited in many ways because of these unanswered questions. And, of course, we referenced the emerging evidence of airborne spread that the WHO is preparing to share with everyone. We're all learning. You know, you can mock and make fun and say, oh, nobody knows what's going on. Well, that might be true to a degree. This is new. This is something that we learn as we go along. And what we're learning now is that this might be more airborne than we initially thought. It spread mostly through respiratory droplets, usually sneezes or coughs. But now the consensus seems to be that tiny viral particles can spread through talking, breathing, singing. So if you're inside someplace, you could be exposed just by walking into a place where somebody was a little while ago without them actually sneezing or coughing on you. That's why it's important to only go inside when you have to, and to know that air filtration is up to standards. We're learning more and more about this. But again, if the numbers are brought down, the odds of this happening become lower and lower. But in places like Florida and Texas, those numbers are going up. So the odds of being infected simply by walking into a store are also going to go up. So these are things to really be cautious about and not take trivially.
Yeah, and people breathe a lot. I mean, if breathing is a vector of spreading, just think about how much breathing is necessary for one person. And that's partly how some of these studies are done and how they're calibrating various predictions and models, and sometimes they can be wrong. Sometimes, I read a study about the average daily, liters of air a person consuming being wildly higher than what was used in one or another review mm-hmm. of how much circulation occurs and what kind of transmission is likely under various scenarios. And not a lot of these systems are imperfect, so it has to be weighed against a lot of calculus and variables that we each know best.
Well, moving on, let's talk about the presidential politics for a little bit. Do you know that our president, Donald Trump, paid somebody to take an SAT test on his behalf? Do you know about this?
Like recently?
Yes. Yeah, he wanted to take an SAT test recently.
GED?
In his 70s. Wanted to see if he still knew what capital city is. I don't even know what questions they ask on SATs these days. But the high score that the proxy earned for him helped Mr. Trump gain admittance as an undergraduate to the University of Pennsylvania's prestigious Wharton Business School.
Oh, wait, is this the quotation where it's talking about being rich or something? Yeah.
Well, he's often boasted about attending Wharton, which he has referred to as the best school in the world and super genius stuff.
I'm having deja vu.
I can't believe I have to read these stories.
I feel like we read this in 2015.
Well, we knew it in 2015.
Yeah, we knew
now,
it.
Now we're getting some verification of this.
Okay.
So basically, this is knowledge coming to us from Mary Trump. Mary Trump.
Okay,
Mary
detail.
Trump. There's a Mary Trump. Isn't that something?
Mary.
Cheating as a way of life. Yeah. Basically, the book is entitled, that's a good title for the book, actually, but that's not the title. The title is Too Much and Never Enough, How My Family Created the World's Most Dangerous Man. Yeah, that's the title. That you got to go with that. So his niece, Mary Trump is his niece, she is publishing a tell-all family memoir. It's coming out next week. So a week from now, we will be able to read more quotes from this. Basically, it describes how a decades-long history of darkness, dysfunction, and brutality turned her uncle into a reckless leader who, according to her publisher, Simon & Schuster, now threatens the world's health, economic security, and social fabric. What have I said that's debatable here? I mean, you know, what do you need? With tens of thousands of people dying from a health crisis that is not being dealt with properly, all kinds of chaos in the world, treaties being broken, and unrest in the streets.
It's certainly within reach.
Yeah. Anyway, the book depicts a multi-generational saga of greed, betrayal, and internecine? How do you even say that word? I don't think I've ever said that word in my life. Tension. I'm going to look that one up later. And seeks to explain how President Trump's position in one of New York's wealthiest and most infamous real estate empires helped him acquire what Ms. Trump has referred to as twisted behaviors, attributes like seeing other people in monetary terms and practicing cheating as a way of life. So we come back to that quote. So they have, and this might surprise people, they've been estranged for a while. they are not on speaking terms. And she is the first member of the Trump clan to break ranks with her relatives by writing a book about their secrets. And since late June, her family, led by the president's younger brother, Robert Trump. Did you know he had a younger brother named Robert Trump? How do I not know that? But there's another Trump, Robert Trump.
Good old Bob.
Robert S. Trump. He's been trying, I don't know why he's the one doing this, but he's been trying to stop the publication of that book, citing, of all things, a confidentiality agreement that she signed nearly 20 years ago during a dispute over the will of the family patriarch, Fred Trump. That one I did know about. You have to sign a confidentiality agreement with members of your own family? How twisted is that?
Yeah, that's a red flag about your family right there.
Absolutely. A judge in New York has refused to enjoin Simon & Schuster from releasing the memoir, enjoin means prevent, and is expected to soon rule on whether Ms. Trump herself violated the confidentiality agreement. Can you imagine that? If, like, your brother told you, he can't tell the story about that time that I tripped on my shoelaces and fell on my ass. You can't tell that. I will sue you if you tell that story to anybody.
People lead,
I'm
really.
I'm telling the story, all right? So... yeah, the hell with you, Bob. Different Bob.
People lead really litigious lives. They think of these conquests as just business as usual. This is how they communicate.
This is a book I really am looking forward to. Even at the start of Mr. Trump's campaign, his sister, Marianne Trump Barry, I'm learning about all these people. I guess I just never really wanted to dig that deeply. Marianne Trump Barry, a retired federal appeals court judge, had deep reservations about his fitness for office. He's a clown. This will never happen. Mary Trump quotes her aunt, Marianne Trump, as saying during one of their regular lunches in 2015, just after Mr. Trump announced that he was running for president. Marianne Trump was particularly baffled by support for her brother among evangelical Christians. The only time Donald went to church was when the cameras were there, Ms. Trump quotes her aunt as saying. It's mind-boggling, but that's all about his base. He has no principles. None. Oh, this is going to be good. I'm looking forward to it so much. And as to why the evangelical Christians, something that Democrats and people on the left can learn from, it's basically covering up your nose and just... dealing with what you have to put up with to get what you want. It's obvious evangelical Christians don't have high regard for Donald Trump, the man who he really is. But while he is in office, he will do things that will be of great benefit to them. What Democrats and people on the left need to learn is that, yeah, Joe Biden's not the best candidate in the world, but he's the only candidate we have. And if you think somehow preventing him from being president is going to prove a point, all it's going to do is get you Trump for four more years. So we have to learn. We have to learn. Sometimes we don't get what we want, but it's a step. And if you don't like Biden, maybe you'll like a woman's right to choose. Maybe you'll like equal treatment for transgender people. Maybe you'll like health care. Maybe you'll like environmental protection. I don't know. It's a lot better than the alternative.
Yeah, I think it's a means to an end would be the appropriate idiom.
Yeah.
Something that is an end that benefits more rather than less people.
When the guy's in power, absolutely, put all the pressure you want on him, and let's fight for things that are well beyond his position, his platform. But now, we just got to get this lunatic out of power before things really get bad. And many people have said this. You know, another 4 years. I can't believe I'm echoing Bolton, but I don't think this country can survive another 4 years of this. I mean, oh my God, it's just... Imagine us 4 years ago looking at this moment in history right now where we've left all kinds of international environmental agreements. We're leaving the WHO. As of today, Trump is beginning the formal withdrawal from the World Health Organization. The World Health Organization in the middle of a pandemic. Yeah, you know what? We're going to leave. Oh, my God.
Guy can pick the exact wrong thing in any situation.
Closing in on 200,000 deaths that did not have to happen from a pandemic that he ignored. All kinds of military crises and economic disasters. I can't even.
Buffoon.
If only we had been able to talk. We wouldn't have believed ourselves, though. If we had been able to warn ourselves 4 years ago.
We were. Play it back.
We did try to warn people. Nobody,
we spent years warning people.
Nobody listened to us. You know what, listeners? It's your fault. You didn't listen to us. Wait, but they're listening now.
No, it's not the listener's fault, per se. It's just how much more engagement, how much more imagination was needed, how much more I told you so. I mean, it's really onerous to beat that drum anymore. I mean, the obvious has been stated and overstated, and yet here we are.
Sometimes I wonder how many listeners we have out there.
I don't think we have any.
I don't think we have any either, because not a single person wrote in to tell us what this mystery song was. We played that last week, remember? Nobody knew. Or nobody cared.
It sounds like Skype or something.
You're close. It's not Skype.
Communications
it's,
platform.
It's actually... When you go to a Zoom meeting and you test out your speakers, that's the little song they play when you click test speakers. It's hard to believe that nobody knows that.
I get it. Everyone's using Zoom.
Everyone's using
Zoom.
Everyone.
That. No one knew that. No, is no one testing their... Wow.
Either nobody's listening.
It seemed familiar.
Or people can't be bothered to investigate. Or people can't be bothered to send an email to otw@2600.com. Well, maybe folks, you can be bothered to give a call to 631-632-6901 and make a little pledge to WUSB, because we're only on for an hour, and that could easily be worse. So the fact that they keep us to an hour is something you should be grateful for. Now, if you want that to maintain itself, you know, and not spread into other time periods, give a call and say, you know what, WUSB, keep things as they are. We support you, because WUSB is the voice of alternatives, and we have so many of them. At 7 o'clock, we have Finn coming in. You hear all kinds of music and interviews, and every day there is something really amazing and cool. We listen to USB as much as we can.
Yeah.
And it's been a great comfort throughout this whole pandemic, hearing people doing shows from their homes or pre-recording or just some of the other material that gets played in a typical day. It all is possible because of listeners like you. And you can go to WUSB.fm, pledge that way, or you can go and call 631-632-6901. You can pledge a low amount every month. You can pay with a credit card. So many ways to do this. And you can get things in return. You can get coffee mugs and T-shirts. The friendly operators who pick up the phone, 631-632-6901, will tell you what you can get for however much you want to pledge. You want to pledge $5 a month? You'll get something for that. You want to pledge $1,000 a month? You'll get something for that, too. Believe me.
Yeah. And there's really cool merchandise. If you'd like a sweatshirt or any kind of WSB-branded mugs or... I'm not sure if they have mugs. I think we have tote bags, probably tote bags. You know what? You have to ask. And the site has a lot of this information. There's many different thank you gifts to select, but the real thank you is continuing to fund and keep this operation running. It is an amazing thing to pull off and to have on the airwaves. And as E said, we are as much listeners as we are volunteers and producers that just enjoy being able to have the conversation with people. So keep those calls coming. And support community radio. It's the way you hear conversations like this and other excellent music and other programming. So please call and visit the website, WUSB.FM, for more information on how you can donate to our radio station.
And we will continue doing what we do for as long as we're able to do what we do, whatever that is. Yeah, pandemic is keeping us out of the studios, keeping us off campus, and who knows how many other people won't be able to attend school or do the normal things that they do.
There's a lot of discussions going on for, in particular, school sessions, and I know the station staff is evaluating. They're constantly reevaluating and discussing what everybody's facing as far as challenges and health and you know what kinds of protocols they're engaging in. So this is an active situation for our operation and the wider community, and we are committed to being here with you.
Yes, on the airwaves. And I miss the studio. I really do. I miss the campus. I miss so many things. But we have to be cautious. We have to be smart. It's maddening to know that if everybody had just followed the guidelines from the start, yeah, we'd be back to normal now because the virus would have had no place to go. And eventually it will get to that stage. But the more people who flout the rules. Yeah, we had unfortunate incidents in Fire Island, out on Montauk, where people just somehow thought didn't apply to them. And now, of course, they'll be getting infected left and right and spreading it to more people, and here we go again. So if you see behavior like that, you got to do something about it. It's not wrong. It's not wrong to let people know when these health issues are taking place right in front of you. So phone number to call. I would program this into your cell phone so that you can basically click on COVID-19 and immediately report when you see social distancing violations at any particular place or people just behaving in a stupid manner that could help spread the virus. The phone number is 833-789-0470. I'm not a narc, but I also don't believe in supporting stupidity, and people need to be educated. And if it takes somebody saying, hey, you need to wear a mask, you need to keep away from other people, you need to follow these guidelines, doesn't matter if you believe in them or not, that is what we are doing, and that's how we are going to stay alive. If it takes a conversation like that to wake somebody up, then I'm all for that conversation.
Actually, that's a good point you raised, because a lot of people say, like, okay, who's going to enforce these policies? Who's going to make me do it?
You will.
You will, and your peers, and your family, and mm-hmm. your kids, mm-hmm. and your boss.
So, okay, you don't have to walk up to some guy waving a Trump flag and get in his face. No, don't do that. But you can call 833-789-0470 and report unsafe conditions. Whether they're habitual, whether it's some mass gathering that just suddenly happened in the middle of the street, I don't know. I don't know what people are doing, but there's a lot of idiots out there, and they need to be stopped because we are the ones paying for this. We are the ones that will be affected. They will too, but they don't seem to care. Okay, I just read this also on more idiocy on our leaving the World Health Organization. If the election goes the same way in November, according to a UN diplomat, whatever is done now can be reversed in the year to come. So it takes time to withdraw. It takes more time to get back in.
It's like a health Brexit.
Yeah. But all these bad things that are happening, it'll take time, but they can be reversed. It's up to you if they are. All right. Trump is outraged at Fox News. That's always nice to hear. He urged his supporters to switch from Fox News to a different conservative news channel after the network covered a poll showing him losing to presumptive Democratic nominee Joe Biden in six key swing states. He lashed out at Fox despite filling his Twitter feed with Fox News clips parroting his talking points after they dared to air a segment on a recent poll that showed Biden leading in battleground states like Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Michigan, Florida, Arizona. Yeah, he said Fox News gladly puts up the phony suppression polls as soon as they come out. We are leading in the real polls because people are sick and tired of watching the Democrat, here we go, the Democrat-run cities in all cases falling apart. Whatever. So report the truth and all of a sudden you're doing something bad. And you know what? Yeah, tune to a different channel that no one's ever heard of and become more and more fragmented.
Yes, relegate yourself to your own obscurity.
So crazy. Other things happening? Statues? Can we talk more about statues? Protests? There was a protest against racism in Montauk. Several hundred protesters marched down Main Street, crowded the Village Green on Monday to continue the momentum of Black Lives Matter demonstrations. Protest organizer Tanish Lindsay, Jamaican immigrant who lives in Montauk, said holding the third protest in Montauk was important because some business owners had objected to a march down Main Street, while some restaurants and stores have treated Black and Latino workers and customers differently than they do whites. Imagine that. Imagine that. I've worked here 10 years, and they treat immigrants like they're nobody, Lindsay said before the march began. She said Black and Latino workers are typically underpaid and given lower-profile kitchen jobs in restaurants, while white workers typically get higher-profile waitressing jobs. As the march began around 3 p.m., she urged protesters to turn up the volume. We have to be loud, walking all the way through Main Street, because they fought this, and we won. Hundreds of mostly white protesters chanted as they marched past dining vacationers in light summer wear, took a knee in the green while Lindsay chanted, "I can't breathe," and then stayed silent in honor of George Floyd, who died under the knee of a white police officer in Minneapolis. Protester Bart Friendlich, who summers in Montauk, said he attended the protest in March for the importance of walking the walk and finally opening my eyes to the fact that there's systemic racism even in this place that I value so much. T.J. Josephs, a worker at John's Drive-In on Main Street, said she hopes the rally really sends a message locally and nationally about racism, even if she herself hasn't seen evidence of it where she works. Her employer helped make the Black Lives Matter signs she carried to the protest and encouraged her to attend, she said. Travis Wilkins, a minister, middle school teacher who graduated from Bridgehampton Schools and earned a doctorate, told the crowd and Montauk, "If our African-American women are good enough to be your nannies during the summer, they're good enough to be respected during the winter." He told white attendees, "We're not mad at you because you're Caucasian. We're mad at a system that has imprisoned us long enough." Willie Jenkins, a local community activist, told the crowd, "We've got to break the system that has allowed racism to continue from his childhood in Bridgehampton to Montauk today. The American dream is for everybody." Andrzej Street of Flanders said in places like the Hamptons, they want to cover up the racism, but it's still there. Still here, actually. Still, she said, "It was good to see people of so many different ages and races. Keep doing your thing. I'm proud of you all." "This is not the time to have your two and three black friends," said Christina Newby of Riverhead, who encouraged the crowd to keep the momentum going and spread the word. "I want you to hit up your 200 or 300 friends on Facebook and educate them. White privilege is 100% real. I'm not saying you should end it. I'm saying I want some too." Well, maybe it should not be white privilege, but yeah. That story came from The Patch, and that story came from Newsday. Okay. And I think it really captured what happened yesterday in Montauk. But bad things are happening, too. Cora Mann was arrested after Suffolk police said he drove into two people participating in a Black Lives Matter protest in Huntington yesterday. And this seems to be a growing phenomenon. Anthony Cambereri was driving a Toyota west on Broadway when he struck the protesters who were standing in the road around 6:45 p.m. Both protesters suffered injuries that were not considered life-threatening and were brought to a nearby hospital. Camberry drove off and was apprehended shortly after. A protester took video after police caught up with him, and this video is really incredible. Like, we can't play it on the air because of all the obscenities, but the cops are treating this guy like he did nothing wrong. He's sitting in his car. They're basically taking his information. They don't have him on the ground. They don't have him in cuffs. Nothing like that. And in fact, I thought he was a cop at first, but just the way they were going back and forth. But this guy hit protesters with his car. And it doesn't matter, were they in the street? Were they supposed to be in the street? No. I don't hit people in the street, regardless of whether or not they have a permit to be in the street. I don't know if they had a permit. I don't care. That's not the point. He hit people. He drove off. What the hell? You can't let that happen. And this is a growing phenomenon. The same thing happened in Seattle. In fact, it was much worse in Seattle a few days ago, where some guy drove onto I-5, which was closed. He drove around cars that were blocking it and mowed down two people, killing one of them. I think it's wrong. That story is not getting any attention, ostensibly because the guy who drove the car was black and the people who were run over were white. That's got nothing to do with it. That's got nothing at all to do with it. It's an act of terrorism, and it should be treated as such. So those marches need to go on. They need to get louder. They need to get bigger. They need to be more disruptive. Because look at what we are facing. Look at the reaction. It ain't right. And you have racists like Lee Zeldin, who represent us, supposedly, going out there and getting all upset about statues coming down, not saying a word about Black Lives, who he purportedly represents in this district, and basically parroting everything that Trump says. In fact, you know, they must have some kind of secret hotline where they strategize, because what happened over the weekend, a statue of Frederick Douglass was torn down. Frederick Douglass, you know.
That was a guy that Trump couldn't pronounce or thought was still alive.
He thought he was still alive. You know, African-American, abolitionist, a hero. This is the kind of person you build a statue for, all right? And some redneck someplace upstate tore it down. So what does Lee Zeldin do? He blames Marxists for this. He said Marxists, for some reason, were behind this. I don't know what he's smoking, but you think somebody who is a leftist went and tore down a statue of an African-American man who fought slavery and is well regarded as a hero of the civil rights movement? How do you arrive at that conclusion? And then the next day, Trump is saying basically the same thing. Now, two people can't arrive at such a crazy conclusion independently.
But it totally sets up the narrative that it's a false flag. Oh, yeah, I was a redneck conservative, but that's what they want you to think. And, you know, then, you know, on into the lamestream media, whatever crap they want to dredge up.
Look, clearly this was done by somebody who is doing a tit-for-tat thing. So you tear down my Confederate statue, I'll tear down a black statue. Look, tearing down statues is not something that is unheard of. Look at what happened when the Soviet Union changed formats, okay? Statues of Lenin and Trotsky, and I think that he was already gone, but all kinds of Soviet heroes were torn down because the perspective changed.
I don't get how a lot of them were, like, exported and are, like, in other countries. Because I know in Seattle there's one.
Well, it's just cool to have a Lenin statue.
Yeah, they're, like, kitsch.
Yeah.
And I really find that weird that it was, like, a symbol of, you know, really not so good stuff. And then all of a sudden they're in American cities just as, like, a cute sculpture.
You could get a really good price on those things. But yeah, you know, that was the people's will, to tear down that statue. Now, would Lee Zeldin, would Trump, would these people say, no, Soviet citizens, observe your history. Keep Lenin, keep Stalin, keep all these statues. Germany, keep Hitler. I don't know if you even had statues, but build statues to Hitler because that's your history. You can't tear that down. Yeah, you can tear it down. You should tear it down when perspectives change, when values change. You're not changing history. Look, William Floyd, we talked about him last week. I did a Twitter poll, which is a big waste of time because my reach on Twitter, even though I have thousands of followers, I reach like 20 people for some reason. It's the algorithm. I'm at war with the algorithm. So I asked, I asked people, should this slaveholder have a parkway named after him, the William Floyd Parkway out east, and a school district named after him? He signed the Declaration of Independence, but he also was a slaveholder. Does he deserve to have these things named after him? Or maybe we should name it after somebody else. And I believe it was 2-1 said, no, he shouldn't have that. I have to agree. You know, basically, it's time for things to change. It's time for our values to change. Look, the highway is still going to be there. William Floyd will still be in the history books. But I think George Floyd is a lot more worthy of having a parkway named after him than William Floyd at this point.
Yeah, like sports stadiums change names all the time, usually because they have a different sponsor.
Now sports teams.
Yeah, now sports teams, exactly. The Redskins,
look,
finally.
Things can change. Look what it took to get us to change, finally. So, you know, I'm kind of proud of that. I'm kind of proud that that we got to that that stage. Yes, I'm aware of the sustaining feature. I just somehow I lost the theme.
Well,
but let me get the theme back. I'm working on it right now.
I think what you're referring to is a wonderful addition to the Off the Wall program here on WUSB. Listener-supported WUSB.
Ah, I got the theme. Films of the year that was. We haven't done this in a while because we've been so busy. In fact, we're going to continue being busy. We'll talk more about that on the show tomorrow night, which I believe is on, about the conference we're organizing. Wow. We're watching films that won the Academy Award for every year that there was an Academy Award. And we're up to 1976 now. And boy, I think this is the low point. Rocky. Rocky won the best film of the year. I don't know how they could have possibly reached that conclusion, but they did. What do you think, Kyle?
I think that it was kind of hard to watch. I mean, I didn't know it was written by Sylvester Stallone. That was
I didn't know
amazing.
He could write.
That actually changed my opinion of it. I guess I'll say technically it's kind of a really cool visual film. A lot of like classic Kodak color, and it would do this weird thing. Like some of the city scenes, the fluorescent lights would be very bright, and then the light from them would be a little bit green. And that kind of vivid playfulness with the light, the existing light, the natural light, I kind of like that. And just the grittiness of Philly and, like, the
Philadelphia. I forgot it was in Philadelphia.
Like, the raised train track. I had no idea. Well, I guess I kind of knew, but seeing the old trains, the raised, I don't know.
I enjoy seeing films that show you a bygone era. In the 1970s, Philadelphia, where else are you going to see that? So if you have to deal with Sylvester Stallone I think it was a stupid plot, to be honest. I really do.
There's certain things that you watch that capture an area, even if it's not necessarily directly in the area, but or a shot on location or a mix of the two. And we're definitely learning that as we go through these. So, yeah, it definitely the iconic setting of Philadelphia is, I think, captured best in this. In this story, and it's really a love story.
Ugh.
And this might be something we differ on. I kind of like their love story, and I think that's why it endures, or that maybe why it had such popular acclaim or something. It's a little sappy, and he is kind of adult. Or kind of a duller.
He is adult.
A dumb as a stump. No. He's
dumb as a post. Well, you know, being hit in the head constantly. That'll do it.
He really plays the fighter part. I mean, you believe him.
Maybe it's because I never understood boxing. I never understood the allure of people hitting each other in the head with their fists.
It's a weird sport. I mean, and the thing is, the story, if you look at it really analytically, is some prize fighter. Apollo himself, he's a big fighter, big name, world champion, gives an opportunity to an up-and-coming fighter who's an unknown. And this fighter happens to be Rocky.
Yeah, the plot is just so fantastic.
And the main reason is he likes his name, the Italian Stallion. He's just going through like a book of different fighters in the like minor leagues.
They never go into the Italian Stallion either. They just, oh yeah, I made up that name. Like, you couldn't make up any name. I don't see how he could have done that.
So it's an underdog story where just the vanity of this world champion who wants to give somebody else an opportunity and likes the sound of him fighting the Italian Stallion. I mean, it's just very superficial and kind of what goes, that sets up the underdog story. So anyway, it's kind of a weird story from that perspective. But then Adrian, the pet shop owner, and that love story starts up and builds out a little bit of what personality he has.
And there's this dog that he got from the pet shop that was supposed to help him in training. And then as soon as he got the dog never showed up again. So I don't know what was going on with that part of the
film. Yeah, you never see the dog inside.
Yeah.
Dog just is out of the picture. And really...
And he gets credit at the end, though. Bubkiss Stallone plays Dog. Yeah, but, you know, it was I guess, a bad year for films.
It's labor.
Because it beat out such losers as All the President's Men, Bound for Glory, Network, Taxi Driver.
Wait
yeah,
a minute.
Rocky, that was the choice. So.
I've never seen Taxi Driver. I got to see some of them.
That's going to do it for us, for our film feature. It's going to be a while, though, because our foreign film hasn't arrived yet, and that comes from the Ivory Coast. I think they actually had to remake the film for us. It's that hard to find. So that's going to take a little while.
Is it Roots?
Côte d'Ivoire. I don't know why Ivory Coast gets to say their name in French. No one else gets to do that. Why is that? Like, France doesn't get to do that. How do you say France in French? Well, that's a bad example, isn't it?
La France?
No, you don't put a la in front of it.
Le France?
All right, whatever. But you know,
France?
Look, I think every country should be said the way it sounds in their native language, but that's not how it works, unfortunately. I'd like to hear how Australians pronounce Australia, for instance. I don't speak Australian. All right, but the thing is, we will have to wait for that film, so it might be a couple of weeks.
Well, maybe if the colonialist shoe was on the other foot, these things would be able to be that way.
Write to us, OTW at 2600.com, and call 631-632-6901. Pledge your support. Stay tuned for Finn. Good night.
Several things that are happening in our world today that are unique.
I'm the phantom of my own opera. Oh, don't I know it? And I think of you. The creature lurks among us, the ghost of our past. Background hung.